Deer Plugged In. You in on this? Toyota's versatile SUVs roll up their sleeves and take on tough jobs, dress up for a night out, or haul your family and friends with their spacious interiors. And they're available with some real sweet tech. Want a hybrid SUV? Oh yeah, they got those too. All with a slew of standard features so you won't break the bank. Get the juice at Toyota.com, folks.
Visit your Front Range Toyota stores today. Toyota, let's go places.
All right, turn it down. We'll do it live.
Who
guys.
Is this guy?
That's a guy, man. It's a guy. You know, sometimes you hear from a guy. It's just a guy. What's up, everybody? Welcome to the DMVR Nuggets podcast.
Let's go.
Have you ever done a show at 6:30 on a Friday before? Is this the first?
I'm sure. I mean, we've done so many shows where I'm sure we have.
How many shows do you think we've done, actually?
So many. Including pregame?
2,000?
I only count the shows that we do that are good as shows.
And oh, we've done so four?
Very few.
Four or five. Guys, Hangover Edition today. We got a couple fellas.
I'm prepared.
More Hangover for some people than others. But yeah, we're going to share some new perspective. I got a rewatch in last night. Do you guys, anybody get a rewatch in? It hasn't been that much time.
I got fourth quarter only.
I've been getting water and McDonald's in.
You watched only the fourth quarter. You're like, we're screwed.
Yeah. No, because I wanted to see, you know, what the big Rui adjustment was or whatever.
Yeah.
The
big Rui adjustment. So we're going to go over all of that. Also going to share a couple other things that we have, you know, some takes we've heard. The streets. What are the streets saying? We'll go through all that. I got the panel with me, though. Wearing a heavy coat. Not sure why. Wearing a heavy coat. Brennan Vogt.
It's a nice shirt. We're throwing it. We got a little private event tonight.
That's a shirt?
I got dressed up ahead of time for it. It is a shirt, yeah.
Oh, I thought that was a heavy coat.
It looks felt.
Yeah.
It looks good. I'm wearing a black t-shirt, dude. I'm not trying to stunt on you.
Listen, I love this part of the show.
This is Adam's game to be like, this guy with this Eric, thing on his face. And then you're like, is that weird? And you're like, hey, why are you bringing it up? You're like,
I'm just sitting here, bro.
Yeah.
The only time we ever talk about each other's clothing on this show, the first minute of it.
Yeah. Do you guys not like my flow?
Are we on?
Denver man here.
What's up, guys?
Very touchy with his hangover.
Very hungover. Moderately touchy.
You should just hair the dog it tonight.
I think I'm going to full other dog of the dog it. Just a second dog.
And then over there, Harrison Wind.
Didn't have anything to say about my clothing.
Apparently I'm not allowed to. I thought this was a fun panel. I guess not.
Yeah, it's just like fun to point out that it's the only time we ever talk about I got clothing.
Wind looks real Brooklyn today, doesn't he?
Hey,
I'm filling in for you.
Hey, I'm partying here.
The most New York guy here. So Nuggets get the big win last night. Dominate the first three quarters, kind of trip up a little bit in the fourth. On rewatch, it felt to me a little bit like it was probably more attention to detail than anything. They gave up some transition stuff, missed some easy shots. But you guys were at the arena. We were here at the bar. We already heard our takes. I kind of want to hear what you guys thought. And I'll start with you, Harrison, since we talked to Vogt last night. But start us off just with sort of the experience of it all and what stood out.
The experience of it all. Well, we were talking about how after media day, it did not seem that big. Like the finals didn't seem that much of a like circus. It didn't seem like this whole event. It just seemed, you know, bigger than the playoffs, but not huge. Last night felt huge. Like last night, game one, it felt like I expected the finals to feel up until the game started. Like there was a lot of just tension in the air. Totally. The lights felt bright. There was just a ton of anticipation. Like right before the Nuggets came out for layup lines, like In the Air Tonight by Phil Collins was playing. It felt like a moment, and it was. I mean, it's game one of the finals. But then the game started, and it just felt like another game. Because that's how the Nuggets played it. And, like, that's why they look so comfortable, because to them, it just was another playoff game. And that's really how it felt for the rest of the night, for the rest of the four quarters. Like, leading up to the game, it felt like this is the biggest moment in franchise history. And then, again, once the game started, it was just like, oh, okay, this is the Nuggets. They're good.
Strong agree. That Jamal Murray layup up and over contact, and then he gives a little shout in the crowd cheers. And it was exactly what you said, that all you could sort of feel the excitement melt into something more like, it was a warmer excitement, almost closer to expectation. Like, oh, yeah, these are the Denver Nuggets we've watched all year. They know what to do, and Jamal looks ready to play.
Yeah. I also wondered, I mean, watching it, I said this going in, I expected a lot of default setting. I thought maybe they would guard him one-on-one a little bit more. They did it for like three possessions in the second or third quarter, and it was just like so overwhelmingly dominant that maybe their plan was to try that for more. A lot of times, road teams in game one will try a couple different strategies so they have tape on everything. But Yoke was so dominant in the one-on-one parts that I think they just went away from, like, all right, we don't need another quarter of this. But I do feel like there was a lot of the default starting lineup, you know, default defensive coverages and different things. And Denver, maybe because they had so many days off, they were more prepared to adjust and do different things. And Miami was more content to be like, let's not put too much. I mean, what do you think they practiced? Win one day?
Miami?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, they really just had like the fake media day practice.
Right. I think they get another practice. I'm guessing they probably get practice.
Yeah, that was like the next day after they arrived in Denver. Yeah, the Nuggets looked very, very prepared. And look, I mean, they had been like by default preparing for the Heat throughout most of that Boston series, you know? So I felt like they were totally prepared. They wanted Bam Adebayo to try to beat them. He did try to beat them. And I feel like the game for more than, you know, three quarters of it, for most of it, just went how the Nuggets wanted it to go. Like, yeah. it went by the script, kind of.
Yeah. D-Line, now that you've digested it, along with several shots of Rakia. And
I didn't digest that. I threw it back up.
Oh, okay.
Ooh,
TMI.
actually not true.
Okay.
I feel like I mirror what you're talking about the finals feeling like. Like, it just was like, oh, my God, what is this going to do? Like, I have this vision in my head of how this is going to go. I just think they're going to be so much more dominant. I always am checking and rechecking my feelings on the Nuggets to make sure that they're true and they're not like just guided by my desire. But I just was like, I think they're going to kick. They're just going to beat the hell out of them. Like, they're just so much bigger. And then it started and I was like, oh my God, they're beating the hell out of them. They're so much bigger. And then I was just watching like, oh my God, this is like, there's no tension here. This is unbelievable. This is a 3 hour long party. Essentially. It's just a,
is there anything about that though? That's not satisfying.
It's not satisfying in that, you know, you want that like feeling of exhilaration, like, yeah. But I have just come to realize in probably the Nuggets already played the finals against the Suns. We're not going to get a better, series than that. And so
was that the best series so
yes,
far?
That's the one game taken, two games taken, no games taken. This is a good chance to be no games taken. That is going to prove to be their most formidable opponent because Devin Booker was like from another planet for a few games. But
I just am saying Denver won game five of that series by 16 points and game six of that series by 25.
So which other series is more? Would you more equate to the finals?
The only other choice might be Minnesota.
It's a little semantic, but that's the point I'm making over here. Is part of me feels like Minnesota played Denver closer. All the games were close outside of the first one, whereas the Suns just got two games from a godlike performance from Devin Booker,
and everybody on the Nuggets was sick,
and they eked out the wins. And then when Denver got back to for Game Five, they just smacked the hell out of them for the next.
Yeah,
two
but
games.
They're about to sweep the Heat in the finals.
I mean, they're one game in.
Yeah, and they beat the thing we're talking about is like, okay, so the two teams,
I think they're gonna win.
The two teams like line up, and we get their default punch. Denver's default punch is so much more devastating than Miami's that they have to now fully rely on adjustments. And like, how many adjustments can they make that are going to be that meaningful?
Well, I think you're 100% right, and we're gonna get into some of that here in a bit. But I also will say they are an adjustment team. Like not that their default punch is not that good. That's why they were an 8 seed. It's why they lost to Atlanta in the play-in game and then barely beat Chicago. It's because they're not that their best punch isn't that good, but they are a let's make adjustments and they just have guys that know how to do it. Whether they have the personnel or not, I don't know. Well, it'll be to be determined. If we go through this though, here's another thing. Vote game one of the first round. Denver wins by 29 points. After that, 9 points, 9 points, lost in overtime, 3 points. They were all close after that. Second round, same thing, 125-107. close, you know, all the way there. Then the end, they obviously took over in Phoenix. And then the Lakers games, blowout, close. Do you feel like this follows the same script? Blowout, but the next ones are going to all be tough?
It's very, very possible. One thing that's different, though, is it's not like Denver was... That was not a prolific shot-making night for the Denver Nuggets. They shot worse from three than the Miami Heat, and it is perfectly fair to point at Strauss, Duncan Robinson, those guys, and say they'll be better in game two, and that's fair, and I think they will. But any conversation about regression has to include, if not start, with Michael Porter Jr., 2 of 11, 1 of 7 from wide open threes, same with KCP. So that sort of avalanche effect we've seen in game ones, it wasn't Denver's best punch, you know, wasn't their strongest avalanche. That could still come in game two if the shots fall. Having said that, I do expect it to get a little closer. I do expect, you know, that Lakers series is funny because it was a sweep and it was never close as a series, but each of those games were close.
Yeah.
And I could see Miami having, you know, some games that are like that and that it feels competitive for four quarters.
Yeah. I mean, Denver, yeah, you're right. 5-point game, 11-point game, and then a 2-point game. It was close. It wasn't quite as close, I think, as everybody makes it sound. I mean, they did win by 17 and then by, but you're right. I'm with you.
Yeah, I'm with you.
I'm just saying, I don't want, we're being, I think, fair about this, but there are people that are going so far as to like, man, they had a chance in every game. It's like, well, it's, by 11. It's like, it was close, but it wasn't like
last night was the 20-point win masquerading as an 11-point.
It is. It's
and
the
half
same
of
thing.
The Lakers series was that, too, is my point. Half of it was a 20-point win that turned out to only be 9.
It's the fourth game one, right, in a row here, where the other fan base is going to go, you know, I could see that one going our way next time.
Right.
And it's like, yeah, I mean, but the thing about Denver is they don't need one way to win, right? The Boston Celtics go 7 of 29 or whatever Denver was from 3.
Right.
They're losing that game, right? The Denver Nuggets won.
Were you surprised at all, Wynn, by how much this felt like just a game? And I don't mean like all the surrounding stuff was obviously big, but once the game got going, it didn't feel more intense to me. Part because I think Denver was so comfortable.
Yeah, I mean, I guess it did surprise me a little bit, and it didn't at the same time. I asked Aaron Gordon after, just why is this team so comfortable, like in the spotlight and in the bright lights, all playoffs long and in the finals, and he just answered it with, because we've been doing the same thing and building these habits all season, so that's why the lights don't affect us, because we just default to the habits we've been building all year. And it's like, yeah, I mean, I guess that makes sense. Like, the Nuggets are just so comfortable in their own skin. They're so connected. They're just on the same track that they've been all playoffs. They're just doing the same thing. So it surprised me at first, because right before game one, like, you could feel it. It felt different. Just the environment in the building, the energy in there, the people that were there. Even though there was only like one celebrity, Ken Jeong, the only celebrity at game one.
So weird.
Which was pretty hilarious. They rolled out the red carpet for him. He was like out there shooting half quarters with Rocky one point.
I love that Colorado was like, come on. Yeah. Like, making a main character.
He probably could have put on a Nuggets uniform last night and sat on the bench. I'm not going to lie. But it felt like a huge event. And then once the game started again, it was just like, oh, this is what the Nuggets have been doing all playoffs. Yeah. Like, they are ready for this. Like Jamal Murray told us at the game one against the Suns.
I swear to God, this all stems from the confidence that they all have and the confidence that Nikola Jokic has in him.
Yeah.
Like, we watched Nikola Jokic play we saw him play in Serbia, and it was a very big moment. It was very clear. You felt the weight of the whole country, you felt the expectation, all the things that you could apply to, you know, sort of an NBA finals. And he was so like, he just does what he does. He just does it. He's like, yeah, I don't know why it's easy for me. I just do it. Like, okay. Am I worried that I'm not going to be able to do it? No, I just do it. So, and then everybody's like, why are we nervous? Like,
I know. You guys probably talked about it last night, but the Jokic quote about people making the finals a way bigger deal than it is.
I love
it. Like, are you kidding?
Somebody's going to ask Jokic, like, what do you have planned this week? And he's like, oh, what do I have planned?
Pool time. He's like, I know.
Pool time. Yeah. I got a couple walks in the schedule.
Oh, I got the finals.
Yeah, that's, you know, every third day.
Which day, though? Do we know which day?
Yeah.
We just touched on this, but I think a part of the reason why it felt the action itself, if it felt anticlimactic to anyone, is part of because our introduction to the playoffs with Jokic and Murray and Malone were these insane roller coasters, these seven game, like just assaults on your heart rate, you know? And because actually the Nuggets, talented enough as they were at the time, they were not ready yet.
Yeah.
And there was a lot of, and that can create more playoff tension. What we're watching right now is a team that's more mature than virtually every opponent in their path. And it's almost weird to what we're waiting for the playoff thrill because Denver just seems to be snuffing out all the hope. Yeah, you know?
That's so true. It is funny to think that we came into this into this playoffs thinking, can Denver win in less than six or seven? And it's can anybody get to six or seven against Denver? Boy, we're getting whiplash from this.
I hate our big market energy is disgusting.
It's not fully here yet, but you know what? Who knows? Maybe it'll arrive if they pull this whole thing off. I'm not quite as ready as Eric is, even though my head tells me I'm with you 100%. My heart still tells me like to be guarded.
Yeah.
Well, it's not your heart. It's the scars and wounds you carry with you every day of your life that we have accumulated every time you watch a season of sports.
Joke's on you. I've had an ablation surgery. I have a scar on my heart.
Oh, man, that is hilarious.
Checkmate.
That's not funny at all.
I feel like the joke's on you there.
Well, it is true. My heart does have issues. Let's take a break. On the other side, I want to get into some notebook notes from my rewatch. And just as a point of conversation, a couple things that stood out to me that I think are interesting.
Guys, Saturday Neon. Saturday Neon is a company started by two friends and former college roommates at CU, great university. They make officially licensed collegiate logo LED neon signs. They're Denver-based. Whether you're a diehard or a casual supporter, you'll love the way these signs light up your space in Buffs colors. They got tons of different signs as well. Whatever college you need, Saturday Neon has got you set. They're shipped with everything you need to mount, power, and dim, so every sign is super easy to install and operate. Looks great in your office, looks great in your man cave, looks great in a sports bar as well.
It does. We have a few of them hanging up.
Yeah, they're beautiful.
We actually have three Saturday Neon signs in the bar. If you come, it's the big CU one, the big Rams one, and the bun they did custom for us, the DNVR bar.
You'll know them when you see them. You'll be like, that's Saturday Neon. So go to SaturdayNeon.com, use the code DNVR for 10% off your order today. Free shipping for orders over $200. Officially licensed for 19 select schools, including Colorado, Arizona, Alabama, Wisconsin, Auburn, and many others. Again, if you have an office, a man cave, dorm room, basement, bar, they are perfect for that. SaturdayNeon.com, use the code DNVR
got a bar.
For 10% off your order today. Free shipping for orders over
$200. We actually have the Saturday Neon.
Also,
That's right.
Take on the sun with gear built to last with Shady Rays.
Oh, let's go.
We're getting some new Shady Rays to the company. Order sheet go out. Can't wait for that. You guys can get hooked up with some pairs of Shady Rays as well. When you go to ShadyRays.com, use the code DNVR, get 50% off 2+ pairs of Shady Rays polarized sunglasses. Perfect for the summertime. This is exclusive for our listeners. ShadyRays.com, use the code DNVR, 50% off 2+ pairs of polarized sunglasses. Go to their website. They got tons of different styles. A lot of them look like the more expensive brands that you've probably been spending money on over the years. Shady Rays has tons of different designs, perfect for every occasion. ShadyRays.com, use the code DNVR for 50% off 2+ pairs.
All right, back here, second segment, getting into some notebooks. But I see in the comments here, I was going to bring this up a little bit later, but somebody says, isn't the record 8 wins? Was it 8 wins or 9 wins in a row for the Nuggets?
I think it's 9 now.
It's 9, yeah. And so Denver currently, I believe, sitting at 7, which means if they win their next 3 games to win the championship, it'll be the longest streak in the Jokic era and would culminate with a championship. It would come not just in the playoffs, but at the literal hardest portion of the schedule possible. That would be the longest streak. I find that to be hilarious.
Yes, the streak stops because it has to. Dude, and not only that.
Can they pick it up night one of the regular season?
That's
next
the craziest thing. Is that
a different team.
We were talking about this. That tells you everything you need to know about Nikola Jokic and his motivation. And if he wants to win a game, he can win a game. In the playoffs, he's interested in winning every single time. In the regular season, the man looks at it like a marathon. He sometimes shoots 2 times. Yeah, sometimes whatever. But it's not like... It's that you don't have the
knife to your throat every night in the regular season like you do in the playoffs. Like, you have to perform. And when they need to, they just do.
I don't think he treats it like a marathon. I think he treats it like if we sent you to high school art class.
Oh, so he's just like
looking for chicks.
Oh, wait, I'm sorry.
No, you dirty dog.
You're not automatically 14 years old again.
Oh, my God.
No, you're the same
you're
guy.
Still you're your really illegal.
Oh, my.
Are we still alive?
No, but I just mean that I think the regular season, he's just like, this is boring. Yeah, like, what are you doing?
He is good.
Oh, it's final exam time? Okay.
All right. I got my yeah, totally.
Yeah. But if you want to know what the streets are saying, I was talking to the streets last night.
Oh, wow.
And the streets think that record could be broken.
The streets are predicting a sweep?
The streets are saying this series is over.
Really?
The streets. The national media streets.
All right, we were going to do this in segment three, but we can do it now. So
I thought we were doing it now. All right. I thought you were skipping it, actually. I wanted to make sure I got it.
All right, we'll circle back to it. I want to do some notebook notes. So there's a couple things, and I'll have a list coming out. Actually, RG is going to edit it. It's going to be a good list this time.
Oh, that's good.
But there's a couple things that I thought were interesting. Number one, the Heat were fronting Jokic. You know, that was part of their big strategy, was they were going to just front him and then trust the backside help. But what I love about this Nuggets team, the continuity, the chemistry that they have, very first play of the game, Bam fronts Jokic in the post. Jokic just screens him because that's what you do whenever a player, that's what the Nuggets like to do when a player fronts you. Murray, without missing a beat, goes right into dribbling around and gets the hang time layup, you know, at the rim. But it was just like, a team made a game plan and an adjustment that took Denver less than a second to be like, oh, we know what we do here.
The first pick and roll.
The very first play. It wasn't even a pick and roll. It was like a post up. He's like, oh, he's fronting. I'll just screen him. Murray, go layup. And it was one of those ones, and they did it all night. Denver has three or four things they like to do when you front that, you know, you can flash a guy and then you do the high-low. Or, you know, they can ISO. Like one time Aaron Gordon gets an ISO on the wing and he sees – he's supposed to post Jokic up, but he sees Bam front him. And Jokic kind of looks at him like, you go, because the rim protector is now out of position. Right. He ISOs Jimmy Butler and gets a wide-open layup out of it. And it's just one of those things where Denver, they've been playing together so long that the adjustments come so much faster.
Yeah.
In real time, yeah.
In real time, without a timeout or anything.
Yeah. Well, they have been playing together for forever. They do have just that chemistry and that synergy. But the other biggest part of it is you have to give Mike Malone and the Nuggets coaching staff a ton of credit. Like, they have had this team so prepared for every series that they've gone into.
Yeah.
And I think that's a big reason why they've dominated every game one. Yeah, they have been over-prepared. And I think you see it as a result of plays like that where they just know the adjustment automatically. And I mean, chemistry can take you a long way, but I think for like as much hate that was thrown Michael Malone's way this regular season, like he has been on point in the playoffs. And like that coaching staff deserves a ton of credit because they've been prepared. They've been absolutely prepared for everything that they've seen this postseason.
So true. That's a great point.
And by the way, you said Malone, he was asked pregame about being nervous or whatever. His daughter asked him, and he's like, you know, I'm not, because I know we're prepared.
He also gave his team a test, apparently, at shootaround, and they passed.
Yeah. According to Jokic, never happened.
Yeah, but according to Jokic, he didn't get a test.
I love those stories. Those are my favorite actual stories.
Who do you believe?
Honestly, you know Jokic. And you know what? I'm writing the column anyway.
That's probably a bit in the middle.
The column was written, by the way. I read it. There was one out there about it. But here's the thing. Malone said he was calm going into this one, but he showed he was calm in the previous one by talking shit after game one. This is how you know Michael Malone, who runs hot
against LeBron James.
Michael Malone, who runs hot, has been so relaxed. How many rage timeouts have there been all playoffs? Five?
There's like, then now they're just like encouragement timeouts.
Now it's like, wait, Malone should probably take a timeout here.
He took his first rage timeout halfway through the third quarter last night. And I was like, whoa.
That's definitely a sign that he knows his team is prepared, man.
And also real growth on his part. Like a little chicken of the egg because everything's great right now. But Jamal Murray cited this as Malone's biggest improvement, that he just, the huddles all used to be so emotional and that Malone's gotten so much better at, and he talked about this last night or recently in one of these availabilities, picking his spots. Picking and choosing when you play emotional cards, when you hit really hard, come down really hard. And so there's emotional maturity in the coach as well. He has been he has the team prepared, but he has been so prepared for this.
Yeah. So I love that one. The other one was Denver playing drop versus Bam Adebayo, and in particular against Jimmy Butler pick and roll. So really you're talking about the defensive coverages against different guys, Max Strus, Duncan Robinson, Yoke's coming up to the level of the screen on most of those, Kyle Lowry, Jimmy Butler in particular, just dropping. And what it allows is Yoke's not a great rim protector, but Bam's also not that great of a lob catcher. You know, as mobile and as everything as he is, he's not like Gobert or one of those guys that's always up above.
Smaller.
Yeah, he's kind of, part of it's because he's so small, but it allowed Jokic to, one, muck up the paint, and it allowed the perimeter players to stay home to try to mitigate the kickouts, which is really the only, I don't want to say the only way, it's by far the most likely way Miami's going to beat you is by getting a bunch of kickout threes.
And shooting 50% from three.
And Denver dropping like that, one, they used their length. Michael Porter had some great contests, you know, chasing screens and this or that. But two, it really funneled the ball to Bam and just kept getting Bam shots. And he had it going for a while, but even when they had it going, it was like, as the game wore on, you were kind of like, does Bam realize that's what they want him to do? That they want him to be taking all these shots? And to me, that was the other big adjustment. I think that one, I think Miami's going to have some counters for. I'll talk about it in a second. But we don't see Jokic drop the way he did last night, and it just worked very well.
Yeah. When it comes to dropping in the defense they played against Jimmy Butler, I did go back. Part of the game I did rewatch is just all of Jimmy Butler shots.
Yeah.
And he got to the rim, I think, on his second basket of the game, drove right by Michael Porter, and then I don't think got to the rim again until late in the fourth quarter. And the reason,
no pressure on the rim from the whole team.
Yeah. And the reason was they just forced him to take mid-range shots.
Yeah.
And look, like, he can hit those shots. Jimmy Butler, actually, if you go back and watch the ones he missed a lot of shots that he can definitely make.
Yeah.
Like, they're very makeable shots, but they're mid-range jumpers.
Yep.
And Jokic is way better than people think at kind of playing the in-between game and dropping, but also like getting a hand up and bothering you a little bit. And they just made Jimmy Butler take, you know, the 15 to 20 footers.
Yep.
And the Heat aren't going to beat the Nuggets if Jimmy Butler has to take those shots every time. As long as they keep him out of the paint so they can stay home on those shooters, like, I felt like they played that matchup perfectly.
Go ahead. I was going to say, I think Jimmy knows that too. Sometimes it's like, oh, why isn't Jimmy taking those shots? Because I don't think Jimmy saw that as the path to victory. He's this alpha male, but he's not a, I need to shoot 60 times.
Yep.
He actually is far more of a team player than these sort of psychological descriptions might imply. Yep. So I think he was aware of that too. And that's the thing, man. That wasn't even a night where Denver was generating a lot of points per possession. But even still, those tough twos, if your perimeter shooters are not involved and confident, you're likely losing that arms race.
There are so many times where you could tell the Heat found themselves in an area the Nuggets were just conceding, running across the lane, finding themselves wide open at like the nail and like not being ready to shoot, not feeling confident. They're like Max Strus or some guy that you would typically expect to feel like good and be like, okay, I'll shoot that. Bam, same thing. Like, and they didn't, they were just so off kilter. They were like, they're like, I don't want to shoot this. So then they make some weird bad pass back out top, and the entire offense is scrambled. It was like, man, they are not on the same page with whatever Denver is giving them right now. Or they just, I mean, which I guess that could be argued, that could be just an adjustment, is sort of like being able and ready to capitalize on wide open mid ranges versus it being a surprise and then having to adjust on the fly. So,
yeah. And I think that the adjustment is going to be, Bam, you can't drop against the good shooters. And I think Miami is going to have to disguise their DHO and pick and roll actions more and tell Bam, and he got this in the fourth quarter, by the way, to stop taking those, as your point, funneling him into it. And they started, you know, to realize that was the plan. And instead, have him just run into a dribble handoff with one of the good shooters. So Jokic drops, he's 7-8 feet off. You turn and throw it to Max Strus and then run and set the pick and roll. Now Jokic has to like sprint up because he was in drop.
The Draymond.
And exactly. And he has to come up and do that. And I think that that's going to be something that they look at, disguising those actions, because drop to show is so different. And if Jokic misguesses any of those, they're kind of like screwed. They're like way out of position. And I just think they're going to end up doing a little bit more of that. Again, it's all of those adjustments are things like, okay, it might work for a bit. Denver will probably adjust to that. But what do you know? I thought a lot of the biggest thing, honestly, from game one is Denver size, both defensively and offensively. But the where the size got compounded was in transition. Yeah. And I don't there wasn't very many fast break points, but that's not the point. The point was every time Miami missed, Denver would sprint down the court, not get a fast break, but force them to match up. And if the matchups weren't exactly perfect, first of all, if they were perfect, Denver still scored at a good rate. But if they weren't perfect with Jimmy Butler on Aaron Gordon, if it was Strus or Vincent or Robinson or Lowry or any of those other guys on Aaron Gordon, it was baby food.
Yep.
And that happened throughout the game, not always just to Aaron Gordon, but even to Michael Porter. Whenever Denver would push the ball down the court, it didn't turn into an immediate basket, but it turned into them being so compromised that Denver scored easy. Mm. I think that's the piece of all of this. They were not putting pressure on the rim, to your point. He wasn't going. But part of that's by design. They're so worried about transition that they're just like not putting pressure on the rim as rebounding or as drives because they want to make sure they don't have to cross match. And yeah. I just think that they're going to have to make a decision, and it's super high risk no matter which one you pick. But it was so clear that they were worried about transition, and for good reason.
Yeah.
Yeah. I remember when the Nuggets beat the Blazers in that series a couple years ago, like Aaron Gordon feasted against that Portland team because of the same reasons that he feasted in game one. He was just so much more physical and stronger and more powerful than his matchup, and Denver looked for it a lot in that series. And I just loved how the Nuggets looked for that matchup from the opening tip.
Right.
Like, really immediately when the game started, Aaron Gordon had, what, 12 points in the first quarter?
10 minutes.
They were quick. Like, it was in the first 5 minutes or so where right. he racked all those up. And it's like, Denver just knew that was going to be a matchup that they could exploit. And now, and you saw that in the second half, like, that is going to be something that Miami has to think about the rest of the series because they don't have a matchup for him. Like, you have to double team Aaron Gordon, you know, in those situations. And that says it's like not what you want to do and as a defense.
They thought about it. I don't think it was a call from the sideline or anything, but Gordon was cooking, posted up, had position, mismatch. And Caleb Martin, who spent a fair amount of time on MPJ, you could see him go. He's like, I think I'm going to double on the catch this time. Gets to the paint, stops, realizes he just left Michael Porter Jr. alone in right. the corner and goes, I don't think we can double team Aaron Gordon. And he's right. But they also can't stop Aaron Gordon. And what Denver is really good at is they found that. They didn't press that button all game.
Right.
It was timely and they pressed it early. And then they fell back into a lot of what they would prefer to do. So they know, they sort of know how to take what you're giving them. And they have so many ways to win.
I think Denver's starting lineup is a near perfect collection of talent. The only flaws, yeah. in my opinion, are that Michael Porter doesn't handle the ball well enough. So when you need secondary creation,
I agree.
Him and KCP aren't always great. And Aaron Gordon doesn't shoot the ball well. So if you get a big player at power forward, then they can clog the paint and he's not a great floor spacer. Denver obviously knows how to mitigate those weaknesses, but they're the only thing that make them not perfect.
That's insane.
And the thing is, Aaron Gordon is so overwhelming as a just bully ball player that if you don't have a player to match up with him, it doesn't matter that he can't shoot. He's just murdering you inside. And that's yep. what we saw in the series. So to your point, so in transition, they were getting buckets because the cross matches, and Miami can't put pressure on the rim unless they're giving up more of those, which I think it's a bad trade-off for them. But if they were to go to a bigger player, a Kevin Love, Denver also did a great job of forcing them to fight through screens because they didn't want to switch on pin downs and on basic actions where Gabe Vincent might run into Aaron Gordon and then have to switch. And that's why I think Denver has, again, it's early to really proclaim this, but it's my opinion. If I'm projecting, I think they have him in a little bit of a checkmate from a personnel standpoint to where all of the little things that they can try to adjust to, the best you could hope is that it confuses them because they do have answers for all of it. It's just, will they figure it out in real time? Like they did in game one.
They have two players that have shown that can be literally unstoppable, and it is Jokic and AG. And if you have one of those guys, you have already your queen set up for the checkmate.
Right, right.
If you have a second one, it's like, okay, we double Jokic. Oh, no, Aaron Gordon's available. Oh, I guess we double Aaron Gordon. Oh, no, Jokic is available. Like, yeah. What? You just hop back and forth. You just get destroyed. You're like, oh, we're going to clog the paint. Like, okay, cool. Jamal Murray's open. And now
I like that metaphor, though, because it is like a chess where the other team, the other guys maybe only has a knight and a rook or something. you have all your pieces, but also a second queen for some reason.
Yeah, you're just like, yeah.
Yeah, also,
and
like,
you get to move as much as you want. Like.
Also, I know Kevin Love is like 6'8", but he's not guarding Aaron Gordon. Yeah. I mean, come on.
So that's my thing, is even if you don't think about all the ripple effects, I think if you just play it straight up, Denver would actually punish him.
Yes.
But then you think about, well, what if you just ran Aaron Gordon and Jamal Murray pick and rolls, and now Love is on Murray, and
I would actually
Lowry
feel a little bad for
Gordon.
Kevin Love if they put him out there to try to guard Aaron Gordon.
The hope is that
don't do that to Kevin.
The hope is that he could make threes. And this leads to a little bit of another. Let me see here. Actually, let's take a break. We need a break, and then we'll get back in. I have a couple more notes from this that I think are that again might lead to some conversation in game two.
Father's Day is right around the corner, guys. Oh, and you know what would be a great Father's Day gift?
What, for Bam to give to Jokic?
No, for you to give to your father.
Oh!
That's the first one is more likely.
The second one was a bigger burn.
Hook him up with Manscaped.
Let's go!
Hook him up with Manscaped.
That'd be a really weird gift.
It really would be, but I mean, you and I both know he needs some serious grooming in his life. So grab your dad the Performance Package 4.0, and he'll thank you for helping him tame his beast.
Don't tell him it's for Father's Day, though.
Just drop it off. Don't tell him who it's from. It's a win-win situation. Go to manscaped.com, use the code DNVR for 20% off plus free shipping. Hook them up with the Lawnmower 4.0. Their fourth generation trimmer features cutting edge ceramic blade and to reduce grooming accidents thanks to their advanced skin safe technology. Oh. You also get a 4000K LED spotlight on the Lawnmower 4.0.
Which turns out you need. I didn't know that.
Yeah, you definitely need it, yeah.
You're not as familiar with the areas you think you might be.
That's right.
Yeah. The Lawnmower 4.0 even allows you to customize your trim through additional guard lengths with sizes 1-4. With this package, you also get the Weed Whacker 2.0 nose and ear hair trimmer.
Now we're talking.
The best nose hair trimmer on the market.
Let's go.
And the perfect gift for your pops. That one might be a little more comfortable to give to him as a present.
I think so.
Yeah, you must be like, hey, I got you a present for me to you.
Yeah. 20% off plus free shipping at manscaped.com. Use the code DNVR. This year, show your original home some love with Manscaped. Oh, man.
What? Customize your trim.
Who writes these?
Did you hear that last line?
Yeah.
Your original home? Think about your dad's
balls? Yeah, that's what they're talking about, man. I'm glad you unpacked it.
Yeah. Holy smokes.
Also, if you need tickets to sporting events, concerts, shows, maybe game two of the NBA Finals, check out Game Time. Use the code DNVR for 20% off your first purchase on Game Time. They've got these great last-minute price drops on Game Time. If you're thinking about going to game two of the Finals, tickets are very expensive. We saw that for game one.
They did drop like $200, though. It was like $950 to like $750.
I think you get it for five something right before game one. I'm sure game two will be pretty similar, maybe even cheaper. So check out the Game Time app. Use the code DNVR when you create an account. Redeem that code DNVR for $20 off your first purchase. Terms apply. But again, create an account. Redeem code DNVR for 20% off. Download the Game Time app today. Last minute tickets, lowest price guaranteed.
All right, back here. One other note I had was they staggered Bam a little bit to go against the bench. And when I say that the Miami Heat were not putting pressure on the rim, that was very deliberately and obviously true, except when Jokic was not on the court. Mm. They are not afraid of Denver's transition in the other minutes very much. And they got a bunch of offensive rebounds. In fact, one possession, I think they had like four or five offensive rebounds. Yeah. So to me, that is another thing that I wouldn't be surprised. Again, none of this stuff I think works long term, but I wouldn't be surprised if they tried to play Kevin Love, Zeller, maybe even try some other combinations of bigs to let Bam rest so that Bam can come in and try to dominate. It's funny, he's too little to guard Jokic, but he's probably too big for Jeff Green and Aaron Gordon, and they might try to mix that up and have him out there a little bit more in those minutes to just kind of overwhelm. Again, I don't know if it'll work, but it's one thing I thought about.
Yeah. The bench offense against the Miami zone in the first half worked, but it was not that impressive. I think Denver got two of their baskets just like passing the ball around, and then end of shot clock, Jamal just shot a three and it went in. Yeah. End of shot clock, Michael Porter just shot a three and went in. Jeff Green got like a right-handed hook from like the foul line to go, which was kind of a shaky shot. Like, they survived it, but I don't think it was pretty.
On that play, Bam was, for some reason, like, he didn't even challenge the shot.
Yeah.
Do you know the one I'm talking about? He, like, stood there and was like, oh, we're going to...
Jeff Green's basket.
Jeff Green's basket, yeah. And Bam was kind of like, oh, we'll let you have that. And I remember thinking, why? If you guard him, he'll never make it. If you leave him open, he'll make it at least sometimes.
He's like, this is a defensive adjustment that I just don't want.
It was really weird.
Yeah. But those minutes were a little shaky, but Denver just made a couple threes and it was fine.
Right. And Murray in particular, I just think he has to lead that second unit. Yep. But again, they can maybe try to dominate that. We know that bench unit is very hot or cold, and they maybe try to go and dominate that one.
Christian Brown also had a play during that bench stint. The one where it was that loose ball that he ran and chased down, dove on the floor, and then was out of bounds. Got a standing ovation at Ball Arena.
Love it.
For a play that didn't even, like, work.
That's, you know what, though? No, that's
Wynn's influence.
Hold on a second. Are you... That... The bar went crazy for that one, too.
Dude, the city of Denver went crazy for that one.
But I'm telling you, it's not... I think it actually was worth it, because it was one of those things that was like... We're going to run out of meaningless play. That's so you're like, we have way more energy than you have.
It was just like a patented Christian Brown play.
Oh, yeah.
That was
his chance to make a play.
Perfect, man. Yeah. And he got a standing ovation. Heat ball, but standing ovation.
He was so pissed when he let that thing go.
He also slid really far.
Yeah, dude. It was actually like wildly
clumsy. And the
Nuggets
were like trying to call timeout, too. And Malone was just furious. He didn't get the call.
I feel like he slid from like the foul line extended all the way to out of bounds.
It was just immediate standing ovation.
I love it.
Who was it that he beat to the ball, too? Because I remember they looked to their left and they're like, oh shit, he's going for it.
Yeah,
like,
I forget
the other thing
probably
about
like Lowry or something. Yeah. He's like, who is this guy?
Someone who would never ever dive.
They also hit Duncan Robinson. They just are so afraid to play opposite of Jokic. They want to limit those minutes, and for good reason, man. That is, talk about a mark. That guy, if he plays against Jokic, they need the score. They're in this weird spot, man, where they're a team that has a defensive group and an offensive group, and obviously Duncan Robinson can help them out. Tyler Hero, if he comes back, is the same thing. But look at this Nuggets offense and tell me that any team can survive one of those guys playing heavy minutes against Jokic. You can't. He finds you.
Man, it's funny. Like, every defense the Nuggets go against, it's just like the same story.
Yeah.
You know, the Lakers, best defense in the playoffs. The Heat, another just great defense. It just looks the same, right?
Yeah,
it does. Like, the Nuggets offense just continues to look the same. They get the same looks. Yeah, so they run the same stuff.
Wide open shots every time.
They run it like as easily as they did the series before. They're the same.
Hold on, Harrison. How often does Murray do a vertical dunk because he's so open to get together? And he did it twice.
They actually get more open as the playoffs go on.
Spoelstra gets it too. He said, he's quoted saying last night, scheme will not save us. And it's that stuff matters, right? Yeah, we talk about these things. They're important factors. But there's a bottom line in that Denver's probably going to get some version of what they want anyway.
Yeah. Yep. I will say, to give the Heat a little credit, Pat Riley and Alonzo Mourning, so gangster. Did you see their walk-in?
Yeah.
Did you see their walk-in?
How is Pat Riley still cool?
How is he still this cool?
How does he still have his hair? That's my biggest question.
That might be
money. He should not have hair like that.
He's living right somehow. But those two, they showed him walking in. You know, the player walks and whatever. And usually, it's whatever. They're all the same. Pat Riley and Alonzo Mourning look like they were right in a Tarantino movie. They look like Pulp Fiction.
Yeah.
Where they're walking in the hallway. They just had the, like, button suit look, face. Oh, no, nobody talking or looking. Just I was just like, man, these guys.
We used to talk about like hallway walks.
Yeah,
Pat Riley,
hallway famer.
Yeah, he is a hallway famer.
He's the most hallway famer ever. Let's talk about what the streets are saying now.
Oh, streets are talking.
The streets are talking about the Denver Nuggets. I got one for you here, you guys. Draymond Green, he picked Denver before this series on his podcast. Do you know why?
Because of Jokic.
Well, in so many words. Nope, not because of that. He said, and I love this, it's not a thing I thought about. He said, if you watch how they have approached these playoffs, they don't mess around when they have a chance to close out. And I was like, you know what? He's right. Most teams mess around at some point or feel out game. He's like, Denver just looks like they're ready and they're not going to waste any time. They're just, everything they do is with purpose. And I'm like, you know what? You're right. He's right. Even this Heat team, that's a very serious team, has some stinkers, absolute stinkers in the playoffs. Denver does not have any stinkers. And when they have a chance to close you out, as I just mentioned, it's 20 points.
This to me is the players have to get a large amount of credit, but to me it has the coaching staff written all over it. And you can throw the vets in there as well.
Yeah.
But that sort of – this is where the sort of emotional kind of micromanaging that Malone – we've seen him do over the years. Like, this is him hitting that note correctly.
Yeah.
And it's – he has found this balance of – you guys are doing this right. We're going to celebrate that. But our goal was not to get to this point doing it right. It has to be every night. It has to be every night. What was he mic'd up saying? You guys are playing like you're up 30. They were up 30. But he means it. Like all of these possessions matter to him. And that, to me, that relentless perspective, I think, is manifesting in this team composure.
Yeah.
Yeah. They talk the talk all regular season about how we need these championship habits and we need to develop them. And now you're seeing like the fruits of that labor. Like this is why Michael Malone gets so pissed after they lose to the Rockets on a Tuesday in late March, because like they need to build these habits because this is what happens when they do.
Yeah.
I mean, it's, coach speak sometimes, I guess, is true. Like, I'm kind of a believer in it now.
Yeah.
Like, I'm a believer in, like, what Michael Malone has preached every regular season, because, like, this is kind of the result of it.
It's not just that the roster's better. It's this stuff,
too. Yeah, it's a big part of it, but there's more.
Right.
Yeah. Another one for you. This one for you, D-Line. Bomani Jones, listening to him today, friend of the show.
Sure.
And he says, the reason people are sleeping on Denver, we all know this, but I don't think it had been distilled this way, is because they had a very linear ascension. It stopped, and everybody treated it like it didn't, like they had just like come down the hill. Mm. They hadn't. They were. This is like if you draw the through lines from 17, 18, 19, 20, and then skip to 23, it's like a straight line.
Yes.
But nobody saw that. I mean, we saw it, but nobody saw that coming. And he's looking at that just saying, like, this is a team that looks like a team that kept growing from 3 years ago.
Yeah, you know what I would call them?
What's that?
Being in purgatory.
Yeah.
We were in purgatory for 2 years. We knew exactly what we had, and we just had to wait for it because it just was stolen from us by force majeure. It wasn't like that the Nuggets made a mistake. It wasn't that they mismanaged their payroll or made a bad trade. It was just like, yo, we don't have our guys. We know what this can be. We like, they were ahead of schedule, as we said, when they made it to the Western Conference Finals in the bubble. They shouldn't have made it that far. That was miraculous. Yeah. They should have been, that was probably, should have made it to a second round kind of team.
Little ahead of schedule.
Little ahead. The next season should have been the season that they made it to the Western Conference Finals. And like, then they would have been prepared. They weren't ready for the Lakers at that point.
That would have been 2021. That would have been, who was it? That was the Suns.
Yeah.
That was the Suns' year.
Yeah, like the Suns probably would have beat the Nuggets that year. Like, it's possible. Still, I'm just saying, like, it is, if we're talking about, but it is also entirely possible that by jumping ahead, they just actually got up higher on the ladder faster.
Yeah.
There's a good chance that the experience they got from that would actually just translate over into the next season. But we just, I love that. Thank you, Bomani, for that very astute observation that we've been screaming from the mountaintops. Yeah, but
some would say they haven't skipped any steps.
Yeah. Yes, dude.
Some would say that.
I don't mean that
to
sound like
skip them.
Yes, I don't, exactly. I just mean like, it's nice to hear people acknowledge that now. Like,
I would take it further too, man. The Denver Nuggets didn't quit in those years.
And not
I
at all.
The front office had to.
We
do
don't
this.
Back down against they, all odds. That's the, what we called the last two playoff series.
And we talk about this winning culture, right? And this commitment to the right stuff. They pushed through. They pushed through those seasons where you could have folded, or what would you do on 2K? You tank for the top lottery pick. But they were like, "Look, we're staying the course with what we're trying to do here." And also, man, a lot of those moves that the front office got killed for. Re-examine it with this context. There was a tightrope walk of, we got to get this roster ready to go. Jokic is probably going to win his 50 games. We cannot compromise that starting five. We cannot compromise the future. So they were limited to things like exceptions and moves that probably wouldn't have moved the needle. But they did what they could to keep a group and an outfit together and moving in a direction towards the goal. And I think there's a chance that if they had handled those seasons differently, the focus may have been different from training camp.
Right. I 100% agree. The last one I have for you from the streets, guys. I don't know if you saw Shaq yesterday after the game. Him and Chuck were doing a post game.
Do your two streets know each other? Is it, are these two streets? The ones that are talking to
there's
him
probably
and
some,
the ones that are talking to
some
you?
Some familiarity.
There's a lot of streets.
Similar yeah. streets.
Similar streets.
There's probably some intersections.
Street crossover. Okay.
Shaq, who never gives big men in particular anything. He's already said no yoke Superman. He's always like raved about him. He's already said he's the best player in the game, this or that. He's likes him more even than that.
Yeah.
I feel like it's the first big, maybe I'm wrong about this. I honestly feel like it's the first big since Shaq that has gotten Shaq's approval to the degree. And last night when he was talking to Jokic and basically just telling him how much he admires his game and all of this stuff. And I'm just thinking, Shaq's the guy that hates every big.
Right. Yeah. But I think he likes Jokic because Shaq's, the thing Shaq hates about every big is how they don't dominate on the block.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, how they don't just take their man and bury him under the rim. Like, he always criticizes Joel Embiid for taking too many jumpers.
Right.
That kind of thing.
Playing soft, yeah. basically.
Jokic, like, kind of dominates the post like Shaq dominated. Like, yes. he takes his man to the block and punishes him. I just think Shaq has, like, that right. respect for him for that.
Yeah, dude, like, Shaq likes bullies.
Yeah.
Shaq
yeah.
likes rugged players. Like, he likes guys that are going to elbow in, that are going to... I mean, like, the highlights of Shaq that you see are him dunking over that guy and, like, sending him into an early retirement.
Yeah.
And it's like that...
And then that
like,
guy throwing the ball
at yes, Shaq. And
he was
Chris,
right. How did they
Chris
allow
Dudley,
that?
Right?
It's insane.
Dudley, yeah. How did they allow him to dunk on him?
It's the most...
It is just dunks and then, the worst, and then teabags
that's
him.
That's the worst
it is the most. Yeah. It is the most disrespectful yeah. thing.
It's like that, he could have just slapped him in the face.
And the guy yes. had to do something.
Yeah. Yeah, you're right. That guy threw the ball like, I can't just take this.
Yeah, but like that's who Shaq is.
Right.
Like
right.
that's yeah. who. So when Shaq sees a guy that doesn't take anything off of anybody ever because he spent his whole life getting beat up by Nemanja and Strahania, yeah. like being the youngest of like big physical country Serbian guys, like they're so physical with each other. It's like, dude, nothing... Like, you think Jokic is scared of any of these guys?
But there's one more piece of this vote, and that is that Shaq, what he says about him, though, is that he's the modern-day version, basically of myself, but he's saying the modern-day version of a dominant one. And I feel like, yes, you're right, because he posts up. But he also, for the first time, I think appreciates the other parts yes. of his game. And that's what's so
cool. He can do whatever
cool.
he wants.
So we've always said Jokic can help push our understanding of what dominance on a yep. basketball court looks like forward.
Yeah.
And I honestly think he's pushed Shaq's understanding of it forward.
Yeah.
That it can be different than just this straight through the brick yep. wall thing. To the point you guys were making, Jokic jokingly said, they said, who were your influences yeah, growing yeah. up in Europe? And Jokic joked and he said, Shaq. And then Shaq thinks it over for a second and he goes, actually, thank you.
Yeah,
think
yeah.
about that, dude. Think about that. He's insulted to be compared to any big that's ever played. Jokic calls himself Shaq, and Shaq goes, I'm kind of flattered.
All the old players love Shaq. Did you see when Jokic went up to Barkley after the game, too? Barkley had this look in his eye like he just saw,
oh, yeah, yeah.
Like,
saw the picture.
Jesus Christ.
Yeah.
Like the old dudes love Jokic
yeah.
because he's not about any of the bullshit yeah. that they hate.
It's true.
That's he's just so about funny. Basketball.
That's what's so funny. Dwight Howard... Embiid, all these guys so desperately want those guys' approval.
Yeah.
Yoke being the only one that doesn't care and has it. It's the yeah. greatest irony of all of this.
Yeah.
And maybe not so ironic. Maybe there's something to it. Anything yeah, else from the streets?
Well, the streets I was talking to at last night's game, I'm not going to name any names. I'm not going to name any names. You've been on their podcast before, though. a lot of the streets think that this series is over.
Yeah.
Like, I heard a lot of guys tell me last night, and I'm talking, like, you know, national analysts who have come into town for this game. We're just talking after, and they're like, I want to pick Nuggets in five, but I just picked Nuggets in six because I kind of had to.
Yeah, yeah.
And a lot of people think this series is over.
It's one game, man. But at the same time, we all...
That's what the streets are saying.
I'm just trying to keep us all grounded.
No, we need to stay grounded, yes. but also...
We want what to ascend.
What we watched was so, like, completely replicable.
Yeah.
Like, there's nothing that was like, oh, man, I hope that guy gets so hot again, scores 45 in the third, so we can squeak out a win. It was like, I guess they can hope that Aaron Gordon shrinks. I don't know. Is that possible?
All right, we got to hurry up and get out of here. We got one more break. While we're taking this break, though, it's a short break. Check. What's that?
We have another break?
Short break.
Short break. So while we're taking this break, guys, we have a new Clips channel on YouTube. I want you to check out DNVR Clips. Just Google it. Go subscribe to it. It's a link in the description if you want to make it even easier on yourself. But go subscribe to it right now. Really cool clips that our new intern Nick has been putting together. I think you're going to enjoy.
Join the NBA Finals action with DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NBA right now. New customers can place a $5 bet and score $200 in bonus bets instantly. Plus, all customers can take a shot at bigger payouts with DraftKings stepped up same game parlays. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app, use code DNVR. New customers can place a $5 bet and score $200 in bonus bets instantly.
Whoa.
That's code DNVR only at DraftKings Sportsbook. Gambling problem, call 1-800-GAMBLER. In Massachusetts, call 800-327-5050 or visit gamblinghelpline.org. In New York, call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY to 467-369. In Kansas, call 1-800-522-4700. On behalf of Boot Hill Casino and Resort, 21 plus in most eligible states, but age varies by jurisdiction. Eligibility restrictions apply. See DraftKings.com/sportsbook for details and state-specific responsible gambling resources. Bonus bets expire 7 days after issuance. Opt-in. 10 plus leg required for 100% boost eligibility. Wagering and deposit restrictions apply. Terms at sportsbook.draftkings.com/basketball. Terms. And for a DraftKings Sportsbook pick of the week, I'm going to take the Nuggets -8.5 points in game two.
Bold.
Nuggets -8.5, game two, DraftKings Sportsbook pick of the week.
Love it.
I expect a similar game to game one. Maybe a little higher scoring.
Wow. I love that. All right. Final segment here. We got a couple super chats.
Sam Croissant. Croissant. Hashtag. He's too little. Aaron Gordon.
But does Aaron Gordon speak with a hashtag?
Should that be the new slogan of our playoff run?
He's too little.
Man, the official emoji of the finals.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. The official emoji. Yeah.
You know what? I don't like this one.
Too small.
Perth Nuggets. Thanks, Harrison. Perth Nuggets, what a night. So glad to be here in person to experience this. P.S. Let me in, fellas. I'm starving. Are you outside? Because the bar is closed.
There you go.
All right.
You guys got any one prediction for this game on Sunday? Is there any like random prediction you have? You kind of gave one already, Wynn. Do you think it's going to be
I think it's going to be a kind of similar game. And I just think it's going to be a little higher scoring because I bet both teams just shoot better from three.
I agree.
So I think the Nuggets win by double digits again. But it's just a little better three-point shooting game.
I can see a world where the Heat make an adjustment, but we get actually a big Jokic scoring game this next game because he just finds himself even more open to score, and he always just takes what the game gives him. But I don't know how you watch that first game and then pick anyone other than the Nuggets.
KCP turnaround.
Oh,
just think he's been too good, too trustworthy.
PCK?
I gave him like a C last night, maybe a C plus.
Yeah, KCP was like frustrated the whole game.
I thought it was the first time I've seen him. Focus is always the key word. I thought he was started playing against the refs a little more than the opponent. Yeah. But I say that to say this. I trust KCP not to do that twice in a row.
I'm going to go Jokic 40 piece. I think it happens in game two. I think they change up a little bit more one-on-one. They probably play Zeller a little bit more thinking like, oh, well, you know, I'm trying to do this or that.
Okay, 50 piece, you mean?
I think it's a 40 piece. Maybe his highest scoring game of this finals. Wow. And I got to say, I love the stats. You saw Jokic, Porter, Murray all getting double-double, one triple-double, two double-doubles. I just love it, man. The stats are so dope. Jokic doing this, and if he goes from triple-double to a 40-piece in his first two finals games, it'd be just like,
it'd be pretty compelling stuff.
Compelling stuff. Everybody, thanks for tuning in with on a Friday. Hit that like button on the way out. Go follow DNVR Clips. See you next time.